It's time for us to talk motoring with Chiro de Siena, a motoring journalist from cars.co.za. Always great to have you with us, Chiro. Thanks as always for your time.
Hi, Pippa. Great to be on the show. Thank you.
We're going to have a chat about the new Hyundai Grand i10, which Chiro has had a chance to drive. And then we've got already loads of questions coming in on email and WhatsApp and SMS. Just a reminder that if you want to send a voice note, the number is 072-567-1567, or you can call us on 021-446-0567. Okay, Chiro, tell us about the new Hyundai. I believe this is going to be competing against the likes of the Kia Picanto and the Polo Vivo.
Yeah, in fact, underneath the skin, it is a Kia Picanto. Hyundai and Kia are partners, and they share a lot of technology and a lot of engines, gearboxes, chassis, that sort of thing. Prices start at 199, so it scrapes in under that sort of psychological 200,000 Rand mm-hmm. barrier. And, you know, the more time progresses, the less cars are under that 200,000 Rand barrier. And with many South Africans being squeezed economically, I think it's becoming an increasingly important segment. And I do think that this little Grand i10 is actually one of the better options in the segment for various reasons. And maybe today it's pertinent to talk about the safety because occasionally small cars still go on sale without ABS, anti-lock braking system. It's standard on the i10. And I just think, especially in wet weather, it's absolutely critical to have ABS in your car. It's also something to keep in mind if you're shopping on the second-hand market. For instance, some Kia Picantos, some Datsun Go's, some Renault Quids don't have ABS. So if you're looking at sort of a 2 or 3 year old one, it's important to know whether it's got that technology. Uh-huh. I just don't think you should drive without it personally. So that's an important one. Two airbags are standard, which is also decent equipment. Again, some cars only go on sale with one airbag. So not a bad level of standard safety spec, which I quite like. And then I quite like sort of how much the car has grown. The i10 actually used to be very compact, although in saying that, it was still actually quite a practical little car. But it's grown quite substantially, and it's also grown in terms of tech and comfort features as well. You get a 6.2-inch touchscreen infotainment system as standard, which I thought was quite impressive. Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, standard navigation as well. So the navigation will come through your phone, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's a very nice touch. And then you can upgrade the car. So, for instance, if you don't like the cloth seats, they will put leather ones in for you. Well, I think it's more pleather, but even million Rand Mercedes Benzes come with pleather these days. So it's not that uncommon. I just really like the package, actually. For 199, you are getting the base spec, although all of that stuff I've mentioned is standard at that price.
Okay.
The model range does go all the way up to 263. And that becomes quite interesting because there's recently been a bunch of mini sort of crossover compact SUVs released onto the market. We've spoken about them before, the Suzuki Vitara Brezza, the Toyota Urban Cruiser, which is the same car, the Nissan Magnite. So I would say that if you're looking at an expensive i10, then it's probably worth jumping up into the segment above. You'll just get more car for the same price. And having a look at one of the, I call it the Suzy Yota, which is the little Suzuki Toyota bad sharing exercise. The Nissan Magnite looks quite good, although I haven't been able to drive one yet. The Kia Sonet also looks quite nice as well. They all sort of start around that 250, 260 mark for the base spec cars. But if you do want a compact little hatch, I'm not sure it gets too much better than the Grand i10, actually. And then you also get one of the best warranties in the country, which is Hyundai's 5+2 warranty, which I think is impressive. It also comes with roadside assistance for 5 years, 24/7 roadside assistance, and a very short service plan, which I don't think is that great. It's only 1 year, 15,000 kilometers. Basically, your first service is on them, and then after that, you're paying cash for your services, which is not ideal, but it's livable. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, Chiro, thanks so much for the positive feedback. So the Hyundai Grand i10. Just one quick question. Fuel consumption, how did it do?
It's really, really good. Look, the motor is a bit, how should we say, underpowered, perhaps.
Okay.
It's a little 1 litre three-cylinder with no turbo, which I quite like because it means it's a low-stress engine. And if you're on the high veld, you're going to notice that it's a bit asthmatic. But if you're down at sea level, it performs just fine. And it really does sip fuel. The claim figure is 5.4 litres to 100, which is really, really good. You should get that on highway driving, maybe a bit more in the city. But that means your fuel really does go a long way. You're almost doing 20 Ks on a litre, basically. Which
okay.
Is really, really good.
Yeah. Roslyn asking whether it's available in automatic, Chiro?
It is, yes. You can get an auto, yeah.
Great. Roslyn, thanks so much for the quick feedback there. Okay, with that, let's move to the first email question, which came in from Norman. And it's actually a follow-up to a call into the show a few weeks ago. Chiro, I don't know if you remember, Norman called in about his dilemma. He had a 2004 Opel Meriva Elegance, which he has enjoyed driving, the 1.8 automatic, run about 100,000 kilometers on the clock or just under that. And his automatic gearbox had failed and he's been told he needs a new clutch actuator. And the first quote he got in March was for 26,000 Rand for the part alone. It's now gone up to 65,000 Rand. And his comment is, the part, that's just the part. So if you add to that the labor, the price of the repair is going to exceed the value of the car. What does he do now? He said, is my only option to scrap this car? And if so, how does one do that?
Goodness me, that's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, the Opel Meriva, I mean, just off the top of my head, I would say, depending on condition and mileage, might not even be worth 65,000 Rand. Wow, that is a really, really tough one. You know, sometimes you get these sort of like miracle mechanics who just make stuff work. And I wonder if it's worth just trying to search for somebody like that who's willing to take the job on and see if possibly there's a repair or if possibly a reconditioned part might be sourceable from, say, a scrapyard. I just feel like it's maybe not worth giving up at this point. And Pippa, perhaps if you just want to pass my email address on to a gent, I'll do some digging and I'll see if I can maybe point him in the right direction. I always feel it's never worth really giving up on a car, to be honest. To replace it, you know, for 65,000 Rand, I mean, what is he going to get? You know, there's just nothing at that price new. Yeah. You have to buy something 10 to 15 years old at that price, and then you're just taking on a whole new set of problems, potentially, you know. So let me see what I can do. I don't necessarily have an answer right off the bat, but I am willing to do a little bit of digging. I do have some contacts here and there who might be willing to help, and I'll maybe see if we can find a nice, happy resolution to this in a few weeks.
That's really kind of you, Chiro. Thank you. Norman, I'll connect the two of you over email after the show this afternoon, and let's hope that maybe that reconditioned part might be out there somewhere to help you solve the issue. Okay, somebody else who is toying with what to do next is Jeff, who has WhatsApped us from Noortuk. Jeff's got a Honda HR-V with close to 100,000 on the clock as well, and is deciding whether he should just drive it till it dies or consider trading it in for a newer secondhand car. Which option would you suggest? And if he was to trade up, what would you recommend? He's been looking at the Audi Q3 or 5 and a VW Tiguan.
Yeah, the thing is, the magic word is Honda, I think. Mm-hmm. They're just pretty bulletproof cars, really. If you look after it, it'll honestly probably get to 500,000 kilometers without too much drama. It's just, they're just those kind of cars. They just seem to go forever. So I would say, your least fuss, potentially the least risk and the least sort of fuss and paperwork is to get a good aftermarket warranty on the car, because you're out of warranty now, and pay a couple of hundred Rand a month just to make sure you've got that cover in case a really large part goes, like, you know, gearbox or something like that, and just keep it going. If you're happy with it and you're happy with the way it drives and the level of practicality, it's a very practical car, then I would just stick in it. All those other cars are obviously very nice to drive. They're very comfortable. They're a little bit larger. Maybe the listener is looking for a bit more space. But, you know, you go used, and again, like we were saying with the gent with the Meriva, you're potentially just buying different problems, really. Mm-hmm. Almost feels like, in this case, sort of, you know, the devil you know. But I see that what's quite nice about the aftermarket warranty space is it's becoming quite competitive, which is always really good for the consumer. I got an ad for another business now on my Instagram yesterday, actually, for a new warranty company, and the name escapes me. But for instance, Hippo.co.za does an aftermarket warranty compare tool now. So you just put in your details once, and you get a bunch of quotes. So it's I think what we're seeing there is that more people are hanging on to their cars for longer and longer, and the demand for these aftermarket warranties is becoming higher, and therefore there's more people entering the space, more businesses entering the space, and like I say, that's always just really good for consumers. So for a couple of hundred rand a month, you can get some really decent cover, but like I say, with Hondas, the one downside with Hondas is that parts are relatively expensive and relatively hard to source.
Yep.
However, you often just don't need them because the thing doesn't break, which is good. So yeah, there's my advice. I don't know if that's too much of a conclusive answer. I would lean towards keeping the car if you're happy with it. And like I say, just make sure you've got the backup and the protection in case something does go wrong.
Okay, thanks for that. Good luck, Jeff, and thanks for an interesting question. Right, anonymous raised. Oh, sorry, it's not anonymous. It's Hugh in Smitswinkel by raising an issue that we've mentioned many times before. Why are there no small diesel buckies for sale in South Africa? Any comment, Chura?
Yeah, it's funny actually. We've got quite a big TikTok account now actually at Cars
at Koza. Cool.
We grew like crazy. I don't know if maybe there's just not a lot of content. And we put out a video, I put it on my Twitter as well, and it was me driving the Corsa Utility, which belonged to one of my crew members, and we did this full review of it. And I made this plea at the end, set to very dramatic music, asking manufacturers to please bring back the small half-ton bucky, which seems to have disappeared from our roads. And it really connected with people. It went viral on Twitter and all the rest of it. So it seems that there is a demand for this thing. But the reality of it is that actually, sadly, it seems to make a poor business case for the manufacturers because they might not be able to get the price too far off, say, some of their base models, like a really base spec Hilux or Nissan or whatever the case may be. So that's one particular issue. The other issue is that, for instance, Volkswagen has this brilliant half-ton bucky based on their Polo, which looks like a Polo just with a sort of bucky slapped on the back, which does really well in the South American market. But it's based on a previous generation of Polo, and the South African plant now makes the latest generation.
Oh.
So then they'd have to import, and then the price advantage would just disappear if you have to bring them in wholesale. So it looks like VW won't bring that in. We've asked them before. They said they've got no plans to bring it in. It's called the Saviero, if you want to Google it, S-A-V-E-I-R-O, I think. Saviero. It's a lovely looking thing, and I do wish it would come back. And of course, the Ford Bantam used to be very popular in this country. The Nissan Champ, the 1400, became like an icon over the years. It was just this wonderful little bucky. And I really do think South Africans miss them, and I think that there's massive sentimental appeal from South Africans, but obviously the manufacturers have run the numbers and they just don't see a strong business case. But I really do think that's a pity. I do think that there's a case there, just anecdotally at least. But then again, I just review cars. I don't sell them, unfortunately.
Okay. Hugh, thanks. Yeah. You've hit one of Chiro's sore points with that question, but appreciate the trigger. Okay. Yeah. Well, to go back to Jeff's question about the Honda and your comment about how long they drive, Sifa's just mailed us to say, my Honda Jazz has just passed the 200,000-kilometer mark with zero problems. Quickly touch wood wherever you are, Sifa. I hope it continues that way. I'm smiling to hear that because mine is not quite there yet, but I'm driving one of those, so I'm happy to hear that they can go that long. Okay.
No, Jazzes go forever. They really do. There's actually, the Jazz, funny enough, the nameplate just got retired in this country.
Really?
They've just launched the Honda Fit, which is just a new Jazz. It's they've taken the nameplate from Asia. And it's looking good. It's also Japanese built, which I think is great. So we're getting some good Japanese export market cars now, which is cool. Little bit expensive, but I wasn't on the launch. My colleagues were yesterday, but if you just Google Honda Fit South Africa, or if you check Cars at Koza, we'll have a launch review on the site. So if you are looking for a new Jazz, they are available. But a Jazz is a car that I just always recommend because they also just seem to be bulletproof, which is great.
Glory, it's making me feel a bit old that my car's name has been retired, Chiro. I've got to be honest. Okay. We've got a voice note that's come in about a car that catches my eye every time I see it on the road. One of my colleagues is driving a little Suzuki Jim. Jimny, and I absolutely love the look of that car. Are we able to access it, Obi? Okay, while I help, wait for my... We've got it, yeah, let's play it.
Hi, Pepper and Chura. If I'm looking at a Jimny, Suzuki Jimny, what else should I be looking at? Thanks, James from Greenpoint.
Thanks, James. Chura, what else would you consider competitors in that market?
It's such a difficult question because we have this issue every year we do our cars awards because we'd like to put the Jimny in some sort of category because we think it's a great little car, but there are just no competitors really to the Jimny. It's such a unique little car. All that being said, as much as I do love the Jimny, and I actually think I'd probably own one at some stage, that's how much I like them, they are very compromised on-road vehicles because they're so good off-road. They're not actually that great on-road. And at highway speed, for instance, I don't find them particularly stable. The engine is sitting at 4,000 RPM because the gearing is so short. So, you've just got this sort of like chainsaw under the bonnet at highway speeds, which is not particularly enjoyable. I think a good compromise, actually, if you like the Suzuki brand and you want something that can do gravel roads with ease and all the rest of it, I actually think the Vitara is the one to go for. I've always liked the Vitara. It's a great little car. If you go use, try look for the one which has the 1.4 naturally aspirated engine. That thing is basically bulletproof. And it's just also a lot more practical than a Jimny. A Jimny is very, in my opinion, a particularly compromised car in terms of practicality as well. It's just such a legendary car because it literally can pretty much drive over anything, which is fantastic. And if you are a 4x4 enthusiast, then go for it. But if you just need a car day to day, I would say the Vitara is the better buy.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Chira, I think we can squeeze in one last quick question. Kyle has emailed a two-question mail. Kyle, I'm going to address the second part today and send the rest of it to Chira to research for next time. Kyle is wondering about the VW Tiguan. He says, why have they decided to release a new VW Tiguan this year, but not a new model of the VW Tiguan All-Space, the 7-seater? I've been considering buying an All-Space, but now I'm worried that if I buy one this year, perhaps next year they'll announce their release a new model, and then I'll want to kick myself as I should have waited for the new one. Any word on the All-Space?
So generally what happens is the manufacturer will start with sort of the standardized variant, I suppose, which will just be the normal short base Tiguan, and then the variants usually come a little bit later in the model life. So I would say that there's a strong chance that a new All-Space will be coming, but I can definitely just pop an email over to VW and get a confirmed answer. All that being said, they might not tell me because they might be hoping to get rid of the stock
already.
Before the word leaks. So sometimes, you get these. We can neither confirm nor deny the existence of a new All-Space. But let me see what I can do. I'll drop them an email and I'll send the answer through to you for that.
Okay, thank you so much, Kyle. I'll also forward the full extent of your query on to Chiro with a view to next week's show. Okay, very quickly, David on the WhatsApp has a quandary. Her Renault Sandero broke down a day before its service. It's a 2017 model. The mechanics have reported that the cylinder head and camshafts are damaged due to oil starvation, and they're recommending a complete cylinder replacement, which is going to cost around 35,000 rand with labor. They recommend I get a used engine for them to install for me, which might be cheaper. I am conflicted, says David. Do I pay more and keep an engine I know, or gamble on a used engine? Finances are tight, so I'm really trying to keep it as affordable as possible.
Oof, that is a tricky one. Not sure I'm going to be able to answer in full before the hour's up. Obviously, it's out of warranty, I suppose, because it's 2017. The years seem fine, but I suppose the mileage is maybe gone. If it's one of those cases, again, like the Mareva, do you throw the car away or try and keep it on the go? I would say if you plan to keep the car, I'd say it's worth spending on the full proper repair. If you're planning to maybe just get the job done, get it back on the road and flip it, then maybe save the money and just get the car back on the road. But I suppose it depends on the plan for the vehicle. If the plan is long term, then I would say go for the more expensive repair.
Chira, thank you very much. As always, you've been massively helpful. And to those whose questions we didn't get to this week, I will set them aside for our next conversation with Chiro next week, Wednesday. In the meantime, look for more of his work on cars.co.za on their YouTube channel. And who knew he was a TikTok star as well? Look for him there too. Chiro, we'll chat next week.
Thank you. Thanks
so much.